This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, alhamdulillah, wa salatu wa salam ala rasulillah wa ala alihi wa sahbihi wa man wala. As you know, brothers and sisters, part of our agenda at the Safina Society Nothing But Facts live stream is the Prophet saying, whosoever is not concerned with the affairs of the Ummah is not one of them, or the affairs of the Muslims. And of course, in the air and what everyone is sort of on their mind is the elections. It's not specifically necessarily 100% a theological issue, but it is nonetheless an important issue that affects people's daily lives, at least the decision. And mostly of all, the Muslims in Michigan. So we have today with us Robert Carter from Five Pillars. He's taken the flight from London to Michigan to do some interviewing, to do some reporting there, and he's with us. So we welcome on to the Safina Society Nothing But Facts live stream. Welcome, Robert. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Great to speak to you again, Dr.
It's my pleasure.
To be here as well.
Let's dive straight into it. So what are your findings regarding the debate? Just like what are the main questions around the debate? I know the Michigan Muslims sort of made waves, not all of them, but some of their leaders in supporting Trump. Have you found that to be a divisive issue in Dearborn?
Yeah, there's no doubt that the debate around how Muslims should mobilize in America is raging here. There is a wide variety of opinions, and I think it's very interesting to witness it. It's similar to the British general election, which also happened earlier this year, where again we saw Muslims mobilizing there to politically punish the establishment mm-hmm. amid the ongoing genocide in Gaza. It was a single issue movement, which was Muslim-led, and it had quite a significant impact on the election and was one of the main features of that election as well. It was described by some as a kind of pro-Gaza vote, but in reality, it was a Muslim-led anti-genocide vote because it was not just about, you know, pursuing the Palestinian cause, but was actively condemning the British establishment for literally supporting a genocide. So there's no doubt about that. And it seems as if that is also happening now here in the States. So it's impressive to see. And it's also potentially unprecedented. I think many Muslims, a huge chunk of Muslims here, all agree that they need to punish the Democrats because obviously they were in power whilst the genocide was unfolding. But the debate is, how is that best achieved? And obviously you have some Arab Americans, a recent viral video of a Yemeni imam based here in Michigan who publicly endorsed Trump along with several other local religious leaders. That is one option to punish the Democrats by siding with Trump and the Republicans, but it's controversial because of Trump's Islamophobic positions and also because, you know, he's an untrustworthy character, but also, you know, he has pursued Israel's interests as well. So it's harder to argue that. But from what I've seen from meeting locals here is that probably most Muslims who want to punish the Democrats are going to vote for Jill Stein and the Greens. But at the same time, it's not a perfect position either, because the Greens have some cons as well as some pros as well. So on genocide, on foreign policy, on breaking the two-party system, this is where the Greens are really strong. But the cons would be they're a smaller party, a weaker force. Could they ever actually achieve meaningful change? That's highly doubtful. And also on social issues, they're very liberal when it comes to things like LGBT, the trans issue. That is contrary to the teachings of Islam, quite frankly. So very awkward for Muslims to get behind the Greens in that regard. So I don't think there's any perfect option for yep. Muslims. And I think the debate can get very heated. But that's what I'm here to witness and to learn about, and also just to see how it plays out. Because, of course, as the debate rages, We will learn on Tuesday how that debate fell and where the Muslims will vote. And regardless of what the findings are, we have to study it and learn, and to learn lessons for future elections, as we hope that the Muslim vote will continue to have some kind of meaningful impact, not just here, but also globally in the West as well.
Who else is in the third party? Who else is running? There's Cornel West. Is he even on the ballot?
I believe so. I must admit that the election process is something new for me to learn about. I haven't heard many Muslims focusing on other alternatives apart from potentially boycotting the vote. So there is a chance that Muslim voter turnout will be very, very low. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard much talk about any additional options other than either voting Green or voting Republican, or basically not voting at all. Those seem to be the main popular options. But sure, I imagine that there is another alternative, and the other candidate, as you mentioned, could be on the ballot paper, but I'm not too sure about that, to be honest with you.
Green Party, I mean, okay, let's say you do win the presidency. What about the Senate? How are you going to get any? How are you going to get any traction for your agenda? Wouldn't it make sense to go from the ground up and get a congressman in, get a couple, maybe a senator at some point? Even if you were to ever win the presidency, you wouldn't have anyone in the Congress or the Senate to do your bidding, right? So it seems to me like the approach is questionable.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I say, the Greens, they're not perfect. There are no perfect options. And I think the Greens' weakest is that, mm-hmm. similar to the Greens in the UK as well, it's a bit of a, to be honest with you, it's a bit of a loser's party. It's questionable about whether they can actually ever achieve anything meaningful. They have good rhetoric, they have good foreign policy positions, they're very admirable, but they never particularly win very much. Yeah. And their ability to make change is highly doubtful. So of course there's weaknesses there, but I think it's an understandable position because the Greens' rhetoric on genocide, on punishing the Democrats and the two-party system has been so intense. It makes sense that many Muslims would vote for that. And I think that Muslims want to do something. So again, the argument for not voting at all will be a hard pill for many American Muslims to swallow, I'm sure, because they see the genocide. They see kids being killed in large numbers. They want to do something, even if it's a bit of a, mm-hmm. A useless measure, if you like. But they have to do something. And if throwing their vote into Jill Stein just to send a message to the Democrats that if you back a genocide against Muslims, then it will cost you politically. Mm-hmm. If that's all they can do, then I guess that's better than nothing. But what I have noticed is that there was a poll released a couple of days ago by CARE, mm-hmm. The Council on American Islamic Relations, which disappointingly appeared to show that many Muslim Americans are still intending to vote Democrat, possibly because old habits die hard. That's been their natural home, I think, in the past. Mm-hmm. So even though there's been a year of genocide, we may actually find that although there's a very good effort currently underway to punish the Democrats may still absorb and keep many, many loyal Muslim voters in this very key election. And that is quite damning, I think, on the American Muslim community, if they're going to do that. If a sizable chunk of American Muslims still vote Democrat, despite this year of genocide, that's going to reflect very poorly on the community, I think, if I'm being honest. Going forward, coming out of this election,
I have a couple questions. First of all, I want to most people who are connected to the Safina Society, they're connected to it because of the dean. So I want to have to give a deany lens through the whole thing. All of this is its opinion. People are trying to get to the best possible course of action. So just on that, the framework of this is that it's all opinion, right? I don't think there's anything religious about, specifically that anyone should feel that, this is a religious issue. They have to vote one way or the other. It's just about whether this is a good, beneficial decision or not. It's all matters of opinion. So that's just the framing right there. Secondly, is that the one thing I did feel that I had a strong opinion about is that loyalty, after you've seen what your party has done, it just seems to be the dumbest approach to politics. Now, we're just going to stick with you regardless, because what it does is disallows you to ever sway these people. You'll never walk away. In any negotiation, the one who has some degree of power is the one who's willing to walk away from the table. And that's where I liked what Imam Tom had to say in contrast to what Mehdi Hassan has to say. Although Mehdi Hassan has been great on the Palestine issue and probably one of the best debaters that the community has, but on this point, I think he's way off. I know a lot of his supporters got so sensitive about it. I like Mehdi Hassan. As a debater, he's probably the best, right? But on political issues. But this loyalty thing, that's not a political strategy for anybody, right? So you're saying that the CARES survey noted that that's still the position of most Muslims? Is that what you're saying?
It looks like it. Obviously, it's just a poll. Yep. I think under
how many people were in the poll?
Under 2,000 people, but it was a quick poll. It
and where? Like poll, just like on Twitter or what?
I think it was probably conducted via their circles. They probably have a subscription system where they can speak to Muslims. I'm not 100% sure about that. Less than 2,000 were questioned, but it was over a short period. It was over, I think, about a 24-hour period. So, you know, that's a pretty good turnout for a quick poll.
Yeah.
And obviously it could go a different way, but it suggests quite highly in that poll that many Muslims will still vote Democrat. And if that's the case, they could help win them the election. And I think that would be an appalling result, quite frankly. I think that I remain hopeful that the Democrats will lose. And I agree with you that Mehdi Hassan's position is not one that I personally find very honorable, to be honest with you. And it's very hard to justify continued support for the Democrats, because the genocide is on their hands. Ultimately, you can slam Trump as much as you want, but he's not been the guy in charge for the past year. That was the Democrats, and Muslims have to politically punish them. There's no doubt about that. But I also find it very distasteful on Mehdi Hassan's part, how in an interview with the Michigan imam that backed Trump, he was very harsh, refused to let him talk, gave him a real grilling, because ultimately he disagreed with him on the political spectrum where he stands. But again, although Trump is a major Islamophobe, he's majorly pro-Israel, he too has many, many problems that Muslims should condemn. I just don't feel as if Mehdi Hassan or the liberal type of Muslim has any right to look down their noses at someone who is on a different end of the spectrum, who is trying to lobby on behalf of the Gaza issue, just because they're not voting the way that Mehdi Hassan agrees with. I mean, the situation in America just looks awful for Muslims. Mm-hmm. I actually don't envy American Muslims having to vote in this, because whatever position you take, it's not ideal. You can be condemned sort of in any direction you go in. But I think that we have to understand that as long as you're trying to do something, there is a logic behind it, and you're trying your best for Gaza, we have to show a degree of respect for that.
Yeah, and I also, a couple points I want to make. I also think that the next period of maybe a decade, and I think forever, Muslims will always have divergent opinions on this, because A, we're so large in number, right? We're so vast in number. There's no set theology to this, right? There's no set Shari'i law on this subject. And I think our strength will be in being able to have divergent opinions. And what that will disallow, it'll disallow the Muslims to ever be a single block that is, you know, swings elections, right? Maybe in a pocket, right? Like a state, like they say Florida in 2001, maybe Michigan in 2024, maybe. But it does also cause Muslims to always be relevant because there is a threat. There is a negative. All right, you want to punish the Democrats. The Republicans couldn't care less about you in the first place. If you boycott Democrats, you go with the Green Party, you don't pay any attention to Republicans, you're irrelevant, right? So the diversity of the community on political issues, I think it does guarantee that you'll be involved everywhere, but you just won't necessarily be one block, unified block. You need to be really small, I think, to be a unified block. And I don't think we have that. But I want to ask you another question. Does the war in Gaza even matter who's president in the United States? That's a fair question to ask, right?
That's why I don't agree with how Mehdi Hassan has conducted himself. This idea that, oh, if you don't vote Democrat and you vote Republican, then you're some kind of idiot or you've got it completely wrong. Because ultimately, backing the Democrats is surely the most deplorable position that anyone can take at this juncture. Mm-hmm. Arguably, it's way worse than anyone wanting to back Trump. And again, I'm not sitting here saying that I'm a Trump supporter from Britain. You know, I recognize that he is a rabid supporter of Israel and that he has pushed the Zionist agenda under his presidency as well. But if you're talking about the genocide and political punishment for allowing that genocide to happen, then surely the Democrats have to be the target. And I think as Muslims, like you say, we're a minority. It's limited how much we can achieve with our vote power. We have to pick our targets selectively and intelligently.
Yep.
That's why in the UK, despite the fact that the Conservatives were the ones in power prior to the election, despite the fact that Labour is the traditional home of Muslims and that Muslims in Britain tend to lean to the left if they are political, the Labour Party were the ones that we could punish significantly more so than the Conservatives because the Labour Party relies on Muslims much more than the Conservatives ever does. So pushing a boycott of the Conservative Party in Britain would have been a waste of time, quite frankly. I don't think they would have cared either way. But pushing a boycott of the Labour Party was and did have a significant impact and really rattled cages and showed that British Muslims are not going to be treated like a doormat when it comes to the issue of Gaza. In fact, it actually sent major shockwaves right up to Number 10 and to Westminster. We actually succeeded in achieving some, there are five pro-Gaza independent MPs that were elected in key seats that the Labour Party was hoping to win in order to further their majority hold on government. So again, that's an example arguably of a targeted campaign which achieved some successes and sent the right message to the British establishment. And that's what I urge American Muslims to try to do. But I really just do not accept the Mehdi Hassan position, because it was similar to the position of British Muslims who remained loyal to the Labour Party, even though the leader of the Labour Party is a notorious supporter of Israel as well. And they were going against the community's efforts to push a boycott campaign. So I think whatever you decide to do, hopefully that is the bottom line here, is punishing the Democrats is a simple goal. It's a realistic goal. It's one that can be achieved, but obviously not with the likes of Mehdi Hassan if he's going to lead the way.
You know what set me off is when he responded to Imam Tom, the arrogance of these liberal democratic leaning people, whether they're from journalism or academia, they are just so arrogant, right? It sets you off. And that's really what set me off on everything up to that point that he said on Gaza, on Palestine, was great. I loved it. I see his shorts coming up every night when I get home and I turn the TV on. I see his shorts coming up. He's great. But the arrogance, right? Talking down on everybody like that. But that's the quality, and that's what set me off from these liberal types from 15 years ago. Like, I cannot even stand coming near them or listening to a word that comes out of their arrogant mouths. That's number one. Number two, we all have been saying the right doesn't care about Muslims. There's no point in interacting with them, right? Then you got Donald Trump going into Michigan 3-4 times. And we know his father, his daughter's father-in-law is now a Lebanese Christian, and he helped facilitate these things, right? A lot of Lebanese in Michigan. But he had, I guess you could say, the gall to go there after all what he said about Muslims. I'm telling you, the guy relies upon the short-term memory of people and the gullibility of some community leaders. And he goes in there, and one guy says, I don't know if you saw this clip, what do you have to say to the Muslim community? We love you, right? What are you going to do about this war? We're going to end it, right? We want peace. Why didn't the Democrats do this? Why didn't Kamala go there? And it's almost like they're trying to be consistent, where Trump is almost like this postmodern type where nothing matters except this feelings at this moment in time. No consistency matters, right? And he was able to get these people to stand up there and be pro and give a pro-Trump rally, basically, in Michigan. So he went 3-4 times, according to what I know. Some of it was publicized and some of it wasn't. But he went 3-4 times. And he had his guy working, his whatever, new family member. Why did Democrats completely drop the ball on this? Why didn't they go number one? And then when they did send in Clinton, oh my gosh, where are they? I mean, he totally basically shot them in the foot. What are your thoughts on how the Democrats just never even tried? Whereas Trump, the obvious, he's got a laundry list of anti-Muslim things that he said, has the gall and the nerve to go out there and just say the opposite things, and things we all know is not true. It's just incompetence from the Harris side.
It could be. I mean, obviously, I don't know Harris personally. I've only seen her interviews, but she comes across as the kind of typical fake, dishonest, establishment-backed mainstream politician that we've had many times in the past. And, you know, I think that they're perhaps she comes from a political line of thinking where they just can't think outside of the box. They're kind of restricted. Everything has to be scripted. Everything has to be by this kind of traditional playbook that politicians have always gone by in the past. Trump, for whatever his many faults, he is an outsider. He's from a business background, wasn't a polished politician with a big political career prior to becoming president. And one of his strengths is he speaks off the cuff, speaks unscripted, he comes and meets you and shakes your hand, and he's trying to use that to his benefit this time around. And it actually appears to be winning over some Muslims, although it's a minority. There are videos going around during his trips here in Dearborn and elsewhere in Michigan where Muslims appear to be reacting relatively positively to his, you know, behind closed door promises to de-escalate and to move away from war. So, you know, I think Trump knows how to read a room. He knows how to exploit weaknesses, especially when he's dealing with 2D caricature, fake style politicians who don't know how to talk publicly. They're not very good at public speaking, and they have to kind of pretend to be what Trump is, which is good with people, an entertainer, a good public speaker, at least an entertaining public speaker, if not a good speaker. And a bit more genuine. So perhaps that's why I think they're rigid in how they can campaign, the Democrats, and that's what's playing out against them. But that's something we've seen many times in the past, and they just can't seem to break away from that, can they?
I have to say, I want to ask this question. Are we sort of overestimating, are Muslims overestimating their relevance in the whole thing?
Possibly. That's what I'm interested to see play out on Tuesday. I don't think I'll be here long enough or have the experience of the, you know, the Muslim community in this country in the short time that I'm here to kind of give you an answer on that. Quite possibly it is. But we will see on Tuesday how it plays out. And I think that because of the significance of swing states in the election system here, I think that Muslims do have a significant ability to create some kind of upset in the American political system. And I hope that it happens this time around, even if it means Trump having to come away as the winner. As long as the Democrats are punished, are humiliated, that will send the right message, at least from the Muslim community. The American political establishment, this two-party system, is not good for the Muslims at all. Both candidates, like you say, are very pro-Israel. They both have problems with how they treat minorities. They both have their many, many flaws. But as Muslims, we have to show that we are a force to be reckoned with as well. And one thing which, in general, I am encouraged by as a kind of Westerner and a Muslim from the UK, is that the Muslim vote in the Western world, the white Western world, appears to be growing in significance and power in a way that it never has before. We could be witnessing the first baby steps to what in the future, in 10, 20 years from now, could be a seriously effective Muslim vote system, a Muslim movement that, if rallying behind certain key issues, could have serious impacts. And I think that already the establishment is getting a little bit scared of this. We could see a backlash, but this is something that we're going to have to step up and deal with, because, quite frankly, Doctor, I don't know about you, but I'm getting sick and tired of the way Muslims are being treated, not just in Gaza, but also here in the West as well. We have so many problems. The way we're treated is essentially like second-class citizens in the UK. I don't know if it's like that in the US. I imagine it probably is. But we need to step up. We need to force a change. And we need to be the moral savior for the West, quite frankly. If left to its own devices, the West is going to continue along its imperialistic agenda. Mm-hmm. Its foreign policy is still going to be abysmal. It's still going to be a force for bad on the world stage. I certainly say that in England. I'm sure many Muslims would argue that in the States. So Muslims may be the only way to morally save these countries by growing our community, spreading Islam a little bit, doing a bit of dawah, and also getting politically active and trying to make our vote count.
I 100% agree with you in that it's going to come from all angles. It's going to come from everyday life. It's going to come from relief work. It's going to come from being involved in everything, being visible in every sphere of life.
Doctor, I only have 4 minutes left on my side. So what I might do is jump in here and just ask you for your predictions on
sure
the election.
Sure thing.
We have a few minutes left. How do you feel it play out?
Either that, or we could send you a link, a Zoom link.
Yeah, fine. Whatever.
Yeah, why don't we send you one so we're not too jammed up? Yeah, and then we can take 10, 15 minutes. All right, so Omar, kindly send Robert a Zoom link there, and then he'll log off, he'll log back on, and then in the meantime, I'll just give our viewers a little bit of an update that there are six swing states. You had viewers. There are six swing states. Wait, did I count right? Seven. Pennsylvania. Georgia. Omar, are you going to send him a Zoom link? Okay. Pennsylvania. Georgia. Michigan, Nevada, Arizona, North Carolina, and Wisconsin. Okay, these are the swing states. Pennsylvania is, I think, if she loses Pennsylvania, Harris has no route to victory. I actually wanted to ask you about another thing. Actually, this is really important. Did you see the video with the guy clicking Trump many times and not being able to click Trump, and then he clicks it and it actually goes to Harris? Did you see that one?
No.
Oh, you
not.
Didn't see that one. Omar, I have to send you. You need to show this one, Omar. So this one was like, wait a second, what is going on here? And is that just a glitch? It seems to be a little bit of a funny glitch. This election thing is not so difficult. This election thing is to make a machine that clicks. It's not so hard. Anyone who works in coding can do this. But Omar, I'm about to send you this. Can you play this? Because that is a little bit fishy, at the very least. Because
it's always talk about election fraud, isn't it?
That's election, yeah.
It's been like a conspiracy for a long time. We even talk about it here, but it appears as if there are some genuine issues that come up every time there's an election. We also have issues with postal voting here in the UK, which gets investigated. Right-wing parties, we have a party called Reform UK, which is a pro-Trump party headed by Nigel Farage, who's a British right-wing politician who's a very big fan and a personal friend of Trump. He pushes this same argument every election that vote rigging is some kind of issue, and it seems as if there are issues. And I'll be honest with you, I think that the West often will never take election processes in the Middle East or Africa. They'll assume the worst. They'll assume it's definitely rigged. That part of the world is very corrupt. Everything there is untrustworthy. But I wonder, human nature is the same wherever you go in the world. I question how honest our democratic processes are. And I wouldn't put it past our establishment, the deep state, if you like, to rig an American election or to rig a British election. Certainly, it's
100%.
possible, very,
It's
very
possible.
possible.
It's within the and Omar, let's play that clip for us, please. Okay, while you join the new link, Omar will play this clip for everyone to see. And in the meantime, you got to look at Harris's route to victory requires Pennsylvania, so the election outcome may be known very early on East Coast time. If she loses Pennsylvania, that's going to be, the worst possibility. All right, here we go. Let's take a look at this. Two, three, four, five, six, seven. Look at that. Did you see it? Rewind that real quick. Not to the whole thing, not the whole thing. Just that. Yeah, there we go. Go. Look, he clicks it, and what? It goes to the opposite candidate. Shay Aji. That's messed up. How is this not a huge story, right? How is this not all over every news outlet, right? What's the second video he has, Omar? Paper card rejected. The guy puts his ballot in and it got rejected. All right, is our man back? Okay, this is what I see, and tell me if you agree with this. One of the first things Muslims set up when they came to the United States, simultaneously, they set up masajid and they set up conventions. Conventions are really important. Bring all the minds together, bring all the people together, and you ended up with two conventions, Isna and Ikna. And that's human nature. A whole bunch of conventions start, you end up with two. Human nature. We need to simplify. So it's like the Coke and Pepsi of the world, the Nike and Adidas of the world. You always end up with two. Then you went to Muslim schools, Islamic schools. Then you went now to the next institution building was seminaries and colleges and darulums and those types of Sharia specialty studies. Now I think the next route are the political action committees. And I think in the next 5, 6, 7, 8 years, you'll have every other person starting a political action committee, but it'll end up in two. Right, they'll end up in two main camps, probably one left leaning and one right leaning. Allah knows best. Although I think that a real political action committee should not have any leanings. It should be whoever gives us the best deal. That's really what it should be. But what do you think of that analysis? You think we're headed there too?
Yeah, quite possibly. Like you say, we tend to need to simplify things. And I think that maybe that's the best way, because I think if it's like calls for reform. I mean, right now there's calls to change the political system. In Britain, I think there are calls to change the way the political system operates in the States because of the electoral college and how that works. And no one's happy because those systems are very complicated. That's the bottom line. And there's a lot of people who vote but then might not be represented and things like that. So, yeah, absolutely. I think that there's serious reforms that are needed as well as all these other issues. And it's all part of the fact that, people know what they have an instinct and they know when the system doesn't work. And that's one of the things I actually learned while I was here, to be honest with you, is that speaking to most Americans about the political system here, no one's particularly happy with it. And I think that that speaks volumes because we talk about how to vote, who to back, changing allegiances. But if the system itself no one's happy with, then it's all a bit of a waste of time, really, isn't it? And I think that we know that the system, there's a lot of money involved. There's questions about, in Britain, for example, there's even questions about whether the two main parties, Labour or the Conservatives, are even fundamentally different. They have the same bottom line agenda and the same worldview about how they run the British economy. Some minor differences which they communicate to you during election time about taxes or where their spending will go, but ultimately they are the same. It's the same side, two sides of the same coin. There's no meaningful change. And I think that that ultimately is the bottom line issue here, is that the concept of Western democracy, whatever form it takes, it's not pleasing anyone, and no one, it's lacking in credibility. And I think that when will this change? Because as we know, again, in human history, systems break, they fall down, they get reformed, and they come to an end. How it will end and how and when it will change and in what form will it take a change, would be very interesting to see. But it seems like we're going into very authoritarian times now. And I think that the war on Gaza, the way that the situation is being dealt with in Ukraine as well, and how the deep state may be acting, it seems like we're going into very authoritarian times, and that people are willing to abandon some of their freedoms and their rights in order to kind of, based on arguments of, oh, well, we just need to trust in the state to rule us. And I worry very much so, definitely about the future in that regard.
Well, politicians tend to be followers. They have to follow public opinion to a degree, lobbies to a degree, corporations to a degree. They have to follow. Now, military complex, they end up having to follow more so than effect a serious change, right? Serious change has to come from the ground up. Cultural changes, and so politics runs, as they say, downstream from culture. Wherever the culture is, the politician has to reflect that, and wherever the lobby is, wherever the money is, the politician has to reflect. So politicians are actually followers. If anything, the election is not where we're headed, it's just a barometer of where we've been culturally and socially, and lobbying work, etc. All right, what do you have to ask for me as you're reporting on Americans here?
Yeah, I guess I just wanted to know about your views on the split. We've discussed it a little bit already. This split, how do you think the Muslims are actually going to vote? How should they vote, in your opinion?
I really don't have I only felt strongly about one thing, which is to punish the Democrats. I felt like if you're going to vote Democrat after all that's happened, right, then you are a lackey. You are a doormat. Nothing you ever say will ever matter again. You're like an abused wife. Now, I have friends who work in the Democratic system, and they say, hold on a second. No, we got a lot of people in place in the Democrats have allowed a lot of people in place in different important positions who are able to help Muslims in different ways, which you guys don't see. And it doesn't really make, and that's what we'd be losing. So it's not like we like Harris or we're just loyalists. We have a lot in the infrastructure as it is, and we'd lose all that, and we'd have zero in a Republican White House. I said to them, I totally get that, but there's no visual there. You can't convince people. Like, how can you message that to the people? How can you tell people we got 35 guys in important positions that can help, that can mitigate things at the very local and individual and minor levels that you'd lose? If you could communicate that, maybe you'd communicate your point better, right? But that's their argument. the argument on the left side is on the Democratic side is that we got all these people in these positions. The Democrats let us, they give us some sway, they give us some room, and that's, and we're trying to build this out, and that's why they're staying loyal to their party, right? So it's not 100% a blind loyalty, but my argument counter that is that how are you going to show this to people? It's not something, the genocide is right there in front of us. What you're saying is not something that you can package and place in front of everyone and convince them to stick with the party for that reason. So that's their argument, you know, and I felt like it's very hard to communicate that. So the easy argument is that the counter argument to that is that, all right, they gave you these positions, but they don't really care about your actual opinions on these matters. So that's why they're going to end up being punished. So that's the only strong opinion that I felt like that I have on this election is that this, you can't let somebody, you can't give a pass to anybody who allows this genocide to go on. But that then again, it's almost like you're ping-ponging back and forth. Then again, no one is stopping Netanyahu. Nobody could. The Democrats can't. The whole country. You guys, you heard of Pastor Wiles? I think his name is Rick Wiles. Yeah, I love this guy, right? This guy says, you want to know who's in control in any nation? Who can't you criticize? Right? You cannot criticize. You can criticize Democrats all day long, criticize Republicans. You can make fun of the president, criticize him all day long, no matter who the president is. There's one group you can't criticize. It's the Zionist lobby. On both sides, Republican and Democrat. I mean, I love this little summary. That's a summary. That's who's in charge. That's why sometimes when I think about this, I'm like, this whole thing is a moot point. Because neither side is actually in charge of what's happening over there. If they wanted to, if they still couldn't do it. They couldn't stop it. I guess it's a very negative opinion, but it's the most practical one. Neither side, it's almost completely irrelevant what happens here. The Zionists are going to do what the Zionists are going to do, regardless.
Who do you think is going to win?
Well, you just never know. It's like game seven in sports. You just never know what's going to happen. I don't even know, to be honest with you. Like, I'm open-minded to the idea that some of these machines are faulty, accidentally on purpose or on purpose. I'm open-minded to that idea. As much as some people say that's out of the question. How is it out of the question when we just saw a video of a guy clicking his candidate and not getting it, right? How is it out of the question? So if it was actually totally representative, I would have to say possibly landslide. Because when I go on social media, I see so much Trump support all over the place, and Madison Square Garden selling out in a blue state, right? Madison Square Garden, you know about it? It's like famous arena right in Midtown, Manhattan.
Yes.
So I see that all over the place, and it's almost like 2016 all over again. The polls saying it's neck and neck. Yeah, but what am I eyes seeing? Your eyes are seeing, I was here in New Jersey, and we're driving in for about 3 minutes. Trucks going the opposite way. 1,000 flags on every truck. And we're like, this is New Jersey. And I'm looking at the license plates. New Jersey, right? Supposedly a blue state, guaranteed. So what is it like in Ohio? What is it like in Pennsylvania? Rural Pennsylvania, outside between Philly and Pittsburgh, right? What is it like in Florida? So what my eyes are seeing, it reminds me of 2016. It's going to, and there was no like COVID really, that's what tripped him up. He's totally screwed it up on COVID. And also just exhausted everybody. So people just wanted put in Biden, who's just, we're not going to hear about politics for like 4 years, right? Now he's on the outside again, coming in, and you're seeing the same thing as 2016. And I told my friends in 2016 way early, I think he's actually going to surprise a lot of you guys, because what your eyes are seeing, you can't deny. Again, YouTube, even they're trying to shut him off. and downgrade everything. But the rallies, they're strong. Harris side, you don't see that kind of thing. You just don't see it. That same energy. So that's why if the... I would say pretty much I think it may be a landslide, right? But you can never discount anything. It's like going into a game seven, right? It's like going in, and you never know what's going to happen on the day of. Although the election, they're trying to stop any rigging by having early voting, and that's already happening. So in some states, at least.
And how powerful do you predict the Muslim vote is going to be?
I think they'll probably push him over the top in Michigan. That's the only place anyone's ever talked. Well, why don't we ask this? Where is he going, right? Where are they going? They sent Clinton to Michigan, so they know Michigan's important, right? Which is ridiculous to pull a guy off the bench who hasn't played politics in how many years in any significant way, and then put him in the most important swing state that you got, that you're just losing, right? And you're going to send this guy who hasn't played politics in years. You guys are the New York Jets. The Democrats are the New York Jets of politics. Like that move particularly, you know, the New York Jets in American football, you probably don't know about this. Anything they touch goes to the garbage. You give them the best roster, they'll put it in the garbage. Whatever they do, they'll screw it up. And I felt like that was their New York Jets moment. Trotting out old Bill Clinton out of the nursing home to give boomer talk. I mean, he's total boomer on how much Hamas is guilty, right? What are you guys doing? So that was their New York Jets moment. But Michigan's got to be the main one because that's where they're going. And their analysts are going to know where to go. Trump going there 3-4 times, sending Clinton out there. It's got to be Michigan. And I think the Muslims will push it over top to the red.
Obviously, one of the things that I think shocked so many onlookers outside of the States was the attempted killing of Trump. I think there was at least two attempts made. And Obviously, the famous one was very, very close. I mean, how was that received here? Do you think that there is some kind of conspiracy to assassinate Trump by, I don't know, the deep state? I mean, that's what many people are wondering.
My personal feeling was that it was two things. Number one, it was probably something like that because the story never adds up with this random kid who's previously had pro-Trump sentiments and wanted to kill both presidents, then ends up dead, so you can't even ask him questions. And it was so incompetent, the way he was literally shooting from on top of the Secret Service headquarters or camp where they put themselves. He's literally on top of that building. Nothing added up, and it never adds up, right? And then the person ends up dead, so nobody can ask questions. That always tells you that something fishy behind the scenes. It's not some lone person acting that way. That's one perspective. The second perspective is that Trump did get himself in order and seemed to be very, pretty much no longer an X factor. Whereas before he was a wild card, and it seems like that's off the table now. I think he's just establishment. He's always been establishment, but within establishment, a little bit of a wild card. But I think that that's maybe scared him off. And then lastly, the most important thing was that the images that came out, you can't discount politics is all perception and image. The posters, the t-shirts that came out of that, and he knew how to take advantage of that moment to produce t-shirts and images of him putting his fists in the air. You know, a lot of people are just gullible people, right? They're just like, whoa, what a picture, right? And they're just going to go with it, and they're jacked, and they're pumped. It's one of the arguments against democracy. It's the rule that you're giving idiots a vote. That's the truth. You're giving them really, people are just moved so easily with emotion. Same thing, my opinion on the jury system. Why don't you just cancel the whole jury system and just have, make it a profession for lawyers. Have 5 lawyers sit on every trial. Lawyers are not going to be fooled by emotion. But he won at the end of the day. At every turn, no matter what happens, look at the people. What are they doing? They're celebrating that. Trump goes in and says some totally probably non-factual thing, like they're eating the cats, they're eating the dogs. And what does it turn into? A TikTok dance craze. Why are these people voting, right? Why do they have the right to vote? But that tells you where the country is. TikTok dance craze. To me, those are actual factors that you got to look into, because these are people swaying a lot of other people. Go into anything he says, turns into a TikTok dance craze. And that's, and you don't see that from the opposite side. So in terms of the assassination attempt, it was a positive for him, I think, in both ways. He got the message. He'll be establishment. No more wild card stuff. And he gets a picture out of it. You know, that famous picture of him holding his hand up. That's my personal analysis of it.
I think that's pretty much it. I mean, obviously, we're going to have to wait and see now. I think everyone's just waiting for the big day. So we can continue speculating. But I think we've got it's till Tuesday, right? So, yeah, 2 days away. Yeah. I think I'm hoping to go and see some pro-Trump reaction next. I've been hanging out with mostly Jill Stein types who are backing her, or people that are boycotting the vote completely. So yeah, it'll be eye-opening to see. I think perhaps we should have another talk before I head back to the UK.
But, yeah, why don't we look at it like this, Ilzam? Okay, if Trump wins, is anybody going to be happy? Very few people in the Muslim community. If Harris wins, yeah, the loyalists will be happy. Those are your two options. And if it gets into, you know what, it could get into some 2000, don't discount, it could go into some 2001 Gore Bush thing where something contests. It's like, remember, it's like in the finals in game 7, you just never know what's going to happen. So there's a 1% chance that that'll happen, right? 1% chance that it'll get crazy, right? And we'll see what happens. But at the end of the day, it's not going to affect Gaza, in my personal opinion. Nothing's going to change on that front. And we're going to go back to life as is. And you want me to connect you with Sheikh Abdullah bin Hamad? Because, you know, he is a Trump supporter.
Yeah, please. That'd be great. I'd really appreciate that. Okay. I just think that the only other thing I've noticed here, I've just noticed that there is a significant number of conversions to Islam taking place. This is something which we talk about a lot in the UK, because it's a phenomenon which we've seen spike after Gaza.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that same phenomena is happening here, but I was in an Uber yesterday and I met a Mexican who had converted to Islam. I visited a stall where there were some pro-Palestine activists handing out leaflets, and there were two converts there. So this seems to me like a phenomenon that is happening in the States as well. And if we can't achieve anything politically, if we can't change anything on the ground for the people of Gaza, then perhaps one of our greatest weapons is to fall on our religion, you know, and to rely on our religion and to keep pushing that message. That's something which I firmly believe now, especially from someone who comes from a very politically active background. Perhaps the most effective thing we can do is remain patient, pray, do our duty as Muslims, and just invite people to Islam. Maybe it's a long-term strategy, but it looks like it's bearing fruit already with the sheer number of conversions that's taking place. And it's something which really worries not just the establishment, but the Islamophobes, the right-wingers, the nationalists. You know, they can't understand. They kill Muslims in large numbers. They're at war with the Muslim world. They invade and occupy Muslim countries, yet the religion continues to grow no matter what they do, even though they have a media pumping out Islamophobic narratives. They have politicians treating Muslims like second-class citizens. They don't platform genuine Muslim speech in the mainstream. We're still growing as a community. And subhanAllah, I think that's a miracle in itself. Perhaps that's our most effective strategy, if nothing else.
That's my philosophy, and that's why we got the soup kitchen going. Go down to the low-hanging fruit, the people whose hearts are open, the people who are genuine, where there's no BS. Politics is 99.999% lies and BS. and nonsense. And win or lose that game, whatever happens, happens. I'm not against people being involved in it. Muslims should be involved in everything, but really where the low-hanging fruit is. To go there, Allah's sending you a message. That's why we film out of a soup kitchen and we're attached to the soup kitchen and we want this to run 7 days a week, right? 7 days a week, soup kitchen open. Now we're open 1 day a week. But that's really what I personally believe in, the low-hanging fruit. Go where people's hearts are open to talk to you, where there's no nonsense, there's no lies, there's no BS, right? That's where you're going to go, because those people, from them will come future governors, future politicians, future millionaires. If you deal with a million masakin, million poor people in your lifetime, from them will come very influential people, just by percentages, right? And those influential people you touch their heart, you touch their lives. They know you 100%. So it's more of a long-term cultural result that you're going to get. And that's what I'm comfortable doing. That's what I do. And I wish everyone the best, regardless of what their, all the Muslims, regardless what their, how they're trying to help, you know, as long as it's within a fundamentals of Islam, I give them support. I pray that they benefit the people and they're successful. So I like to take that optimistic and clean-hearted approach towards all the Muslims trying to do different things, even in politics.
Inshallah, inshallah. No, I wish you all the best, and I wish everyone here in America all the best. And I hope that, however the vote falls, it will send the right message to the people of Gaza. Inshallah.
Likewise, thank you very much. Thanks for coming on.
I appreciate it. God bless. Jazakallah khair. Masalama.
All right, there you have it, folks. We'll find out Tuesday. Omar, what do you usually do on election night? Watching it as if it's like the Super Bowl or something, right? It's like a sports match, right? And I had to admit, you know how much I despise the arrogance of liberals. It's not the liberal positions only. It's just it's the arrogance, right? And there used to be a time when liberals weren't arrogant. They were like nice people. Then they just became so cocky, so arrogant, so highfalutin that I despise them. You know that the Republicans used to be the elites, elitist, and arrogant. That's what I remember from the first George Bush presidency. At that time, Republicans were this like some elitists. And the Democrat is always going for the working class, right? Everything shifted. Democrats are the most elitist, arrogant people that when I see them talk, I can't stand looking at them or hearing them. And now Muslims have copied them. And I've lost friends like this. I'm like, I don't want to be around you. You're so arrogant, right? And on top of that, you're sort of dumb because you're treating a matter of opinion, political opinion, as if it's like gospel truth, right? As if it's like Quran. And it's something that's, if you don't have this opinion, you must be the dumbest person in the world, right? As if it's like some heresy. But I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed watching in 2016, that evening, all of these arrogant, elitist journalists, anchormen, whatever, on CNN, squirming at the results. That's what I enjoyed, right? And I would never be pro-Trump. It would never happen, okay? But I thoroughly enjoyed watching these people squirm in their seats as they had to announce it. And that is likely what's going to happen again Tuesday. Unless the wild card thing comes into play, and something crazy happens. And that's basically what is, you know, possible.
I think there'll be a civil war if that happens, to be honest.
Okay, let's play this out. Civil war. Go ahead, Omar. I'm sorry to cut you off.
Maybe not in a literal sense, but there's going to be a lot of backlash for, like, because obviously the Republicans, you can see that they're sick and tired now. Mm-hmm. Like it's gotten to like a breaking point.
Yeah.
And before they weren't as organized as they are now. Mm-hmm. And I think a big part of that is X and Twitter, formerly Twitter. So you see, like, the Republicans now, they're like one body, which wasn't exactly the case before. There was more, like, division between them. So they're organized now through X and these platforms. And if Trump loses, because they're very confident, I think, that Trump's going to win.
Yeah.
Like, they're seeing the same thing you and I are seeing, that mm-hmm. everyone else is seeing, that Trump is clearly, like, public opinion's leaning towards him. And I think if he loses, right, they're gonna go crazy. They're gonna be like, this is rigged, and this, and also the way that they're portraying it is like that this is the last election.
Mm-hmm.
This is how they've portrayed it. It's not just like, oh, you know, we'll try again next time. No, they're saying this is the last election. If you want your freedom, Trump must win, or else America's doomed.
Not only that, this is the Republicans' last unified election. No one's going to unify them like the way Trump. Trump basically, he came in as a CEO of a company, basically treated it like that. If you disagree with me, you're out. This is not a democratic operation here that everyone has an opinion. And as that's how it unified, because he's disagreeing with you, you're out. All right. And he continues to foray with conflict against the Democrats. The conflict fuels more loyalty, right? And getting behind him even more. But let's play this out. Let's hypothetically say that some of these polls, some of these machines were messed up, and there's a lot of videos to prove it. We just have one, right? Could possibly be just one, but could be more. How could there actually be civil strife? Like, where would it be? It would have to be in a certain location where some crazy militia takes over a civil building somewhere, or a state building, or a county office or something. Like, how would the country's too big for this, right? It's too big for actual civil war.
Because, you know, the issue is that Republicans have guns.
They got guns. Okay, how are you going to use it? Are you going to take over, like, a civil building? Are you going to take over a state capitol? Or is the state itself going to refuse to play along? Like, one specific state that's super hardcore Trump is going to refuse to play along. I've been doing this for 8 years now, right? Because, you know, that 2016 went around, there was a guy on the internet. His name was John Marks. And John Marks turned out to be, I'll tell you what he turned out to be, but he was playing this out, saying he's former military, and I'm playing this out. What would civil war look like? And he'd come out with a 1 hour video of, here's a possibility of civil strife. Here's another possibility of civil strife. Then finally he ran a huge event, like this humongous march, and you had to sign up. You had to put your email in. He never showed up. The channel got shut down the next day. So we know he's a Fed, right? He was a Fed. I think he was a Fed. That's a predominant theory, where he was like a honey trap to see who would show up, how many people would view this, what are the comments like? Is this actual reality? Goes to show us that the government's probably leaps and bounds ahead of anything that anyone else is saying. So, well, there will definitely be chaos, but would the chaos ever take root in the ground, in physically, in any way, shape, and form?
I mean, definitely riots, I think, because remember what happened with George Floyd, for example, those riots? I think majority of those people were Democrats, like,
mm-hmm.
pretty much like a vast majority of those people that were rioting, they were Democrats, and we saw a lot of destruction and damage. Like, that was a pretty bad time. We've never seen something like that in the last, like, decades, a few decades. And I think that it's going to be worse than that, like, without a doubt. If Trump is to lose.
Yeah, and especially if these election videos come, if these videos come out, he'll definitely, there's going to be issues. But I'm just been trying to think how, like, what?
Yeah, that's the question.
Yassine, turn Yassine's mic on. Yassine, what do you have?
I mean, I live under a rock, so I don't really know anything.
Mm. So
it seems evident that something will, you know, because it doesn't fit the narrative that nothing will happen and everything will be the scale and the implications
of the emotions of Trump supporters. It can't go smoothly.
Yeah, because, like, for example, if last election cycle something went down during the inauguration.
Yeah.
Situation like that were to happen again,
mm-hmm.
like, necessarily would have to be worse, because it's not like something, you know, like,
yeah,
something bad doesn't go down one time and then the next time it happens it's a better,
well, that's a good argument. January 6th already happened, right?
So if there were to be another January 6th, it would be worse, right?
Yeah, so naturally the progression is going worse. It's the emotions towards Trump is not going less, it's increased. Akil is saying there's this user here, a viewer here, no way that there's civil strife. Yeah, I agree. There's no way there's going to be a civil war. The state is way too strong. But there will be something. There's got to be something. It could be like at some very little local pockets, and it'll take 2-3 months to just cool down. The state is just too strong. No one's.
I mean, metaphorically.
Yeah.
I think that's what some people
might imagine. Protests like that, skirmishes, like things like that for like a month or two. But then again, also, I really do think that there must have been some behind the scenes talks with so called deep state signaling that he's not a wild card anymore. Don't let him have it. That's another possibility. I think they'll just let him have it. He's not a wild card anymore. Who is he going to stand in front of? Is he going to stand in front of Israel? No. Is he going to stand in front of... Who is he bothering? What military complex is he going to bother? Right? I don't think he's a wild card anymore. He's just an establishment. It's just a different color of establishment. We got to go to class. Jazakumullah khairan, everybody. All right, Ali Ahmed, go to Maliki Fiqh QA for that. You'll see an article right there. Jazakumullah khairan, everyone. Subhanakallahumma wa bihamdika nashhadu an la ilaha illa anta nastaghfiruka wa natubu ilayk. Wal asr, innal insana lafi khusr illa alladhina amanu wa amilus salihat wa tawasaw bil haqq wa tawasaw bis sabr. Wassalamu alaykum.